Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, November 4th, 2021. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. In looking at today's front page, there are headlines, New Mayors to Lead Area Cities, and Short on Space, Homeless Shelters Brace for Winter. But today, we're going to start with County's virus cases continue to surge. Daily average of new cases climbs closer to last winter's peak, by Benjamin Fisher. The COVID-19 surge in Dubuque County continues, with the daily new case average over the past week reaching levels not seen since the first 2 weeks of the year. A total of 434 additional Dubuque County residents were confirmed to have COVID-19 from October 27th to Wednesday. The weekly total is easily the highest since the state of Iowa went to once-weekly reporting of county-level data in July, surpassing the 370 cases reported on October 27th. The 434 cases equates to 62 new cases per day over that span. When the state still reported data daily, the last time Dubuque County had more than 60 cases in a single day was on January 23rd, and the last time that the county had at least 3 days of 60 or more cases during 1 week came during the first half of January. 4 more COVID-19-related deaths also were reported over the past week, according to Telegraph Herald data. That pushed the county's to-date total to 236 deaths, the sixth highest total in the state. Children continue to make up a significant portion of the recent confirmed cases. If you look at our positive cases reported in the past week, 28% are children from 0 to 17, said Patrice Lambert, Dubuque County Health Department Director. Dubuque Community School District reported 90 active cases among students as of Wednesday, up 12 from 78 on October 27th. Western Dubuque Community School District had 43 active cases among students, up from 37 on October 27th. Holy Family Catholic Schools reported 17 cases among students. That was up from 10 on October 27th. Lambert said that Dubuque County COVID-19 Incident Management Team members were excited to learn of approval by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Iowa Department of Public Health of a reduced dosage Pfizer vaccine against COVID-19 among children ages 5 to 11. We know that even with the younger populations, vaccines work, she said. We're hoping that being able to vaccinate more people, we will decrease the spread to other people. The incident management team was busy Wednesday afternoon planning the county's administration of vaccines among that younger population. But the new cases are far from limited to children. Residents from 30 to 39 years old made up 15% of new cases in the past week, as did residents from 18 to 29 years old. Residents from 40 to 49 made up 13% of new cases in the last week. One cause of that could be students bringing the virus home with them, as was suspected after last week's increase. But Lambert said seasonal influences could be impacting the spread as well. Is it because more events are inside? Or is it because people are having symptoms and thinking it's only a common cold? She asked. In places of employment, more windows are being shut, more doors are being shut, more work is being brought indoors. But we know others just think, oh, it's flu season, and never get tested. The spread among older populations is also being seen in schools. The number of positive cases among Dubuque Community Schools staff more than doubled in the past week from 10 to 25. District Chief Human Resources Officer Amy Hawkins said the increase presents another challenge when the district has faced hurdles covering staff absences since the beginning of the school year. We've had a shortage of subs in our buildings, she said. We're thankful that the case numbers are pretty spread out among our 20 buildings, so we don't have a big chunk of staff gone from the same school. To combat all of this, Lambert asked, as she had since vaccines first became available, for people to be vaccinated if they are eligible. They will help prevent death, hospitalizations, ICU admissions, she said. We want people, if they are eligible, to please get vaccinated. It can eliminate being absent from school, being absent from their work site, not having to go to the hospital. Next from the front page, short on space, homeless shelters brace for winter. As temperatures fall, area facilities see an increase in requests for housing services, by Elizabeth Kelsey. A multitude of factors, from dropping temperatures to shifts in services, have local homeless shelters thinking carefully about the months to come. Rick Mim, executive director of the Dubuque Rescue Mission, said the men's shelter often sees a jump in requests for service as the weather turns colder. Some of the individuals that we see often at this time of the year, they've been living out in the woods at the mines of Spain under the 16th Street Bridge, he said. You can't do that when it gets to be 28 degrees at night or zero, so they usually show back up. However, the shelter is already full nearly every night because the rescue mission is operating at 60% capacity due to COVID-19 precautions. Instead of its typical limit of about 30 men, the shelter can accept 16 to 18. Furthermore, the rescue mission previously utilized overflow space at the guest house, a seasonal homeless shelter for men at St. John's Evangelical Lutheran Church, operated by Almost Home. The space offers 12 beds, which Mim said the rescue mission used nearly every night in winter. Now, Almost Home has shifted its focus to men with children and will no longer serve as overflow for the rescue mission. Almost Home Executive Director Gwen Kirchhoff said the shelter is currently constructing two apartment units that should open in November. Each can house one man with up to six children. The shelter, which will now operate year-round, plans to open an additional three units by next June. Mim said the shift in services will fill a much-needed gap in the city's resources for the homeless, as no other facility offers housing for men with children. But it also puts pressure on the rescue mission. In response, he said, the shelter is creating space for a few extra tenants in the basement and hallway and has sent seven men to Hope House, a shelter located in the 1500 block of Locust Street in Dubuque. We've been able to shuffle and create some little corners to put a person in, and that's what we're going to have to do, he said. It won't be as comfortable, but it'll be warm. In Lancaster, Wisconsin, Kimberly Jacobson is executive director of Family Promise of Grant County, which offers shelter, meals, and support services for homeless families with children under 18. After a really quiet summer, Jacobson said calls have increased drastically. Five people are currently staying at the shelter, and she expects the facility will reach its capacity of 12 before winter arrives. Staff at Almost Home have also seen an increase in requests for coats, hats, and other winter gear at Open Closet, the shelter's collection of free clothes and shoes. On one day alone, 71 pairs of sweatpants were distributed. I feel people are preparing more just because we see the upswing in wanting winter clothes already, Kirchhoff said. Usually, we are just inundated when it's the first snowfall, so I consider that positive that people are looking ahead. Requests have also trended upward at Teresa's Shelter, an emergency housing and extended stay facility for women and children operated by Opening Doors in Dubuque. Executive Director Carol Gebhardt said staff linked the increase to the end of a federal moratorium on evictions in August. Once the moratorium on evictions expired, we knew that we would then start to see more requests for intakes, and that is true, she said. Teresa's Shelter can accommodate around 30 residents, and the shelter is now close to full, she said. Based on her experience from prior years, the shelter will be busy, but manageable, during the holiday season. Holidays are very stressful for a lot of people, and if you've got family relationships that are not healthy, the holidays can tip them, she said. People need to get out of unhealthy situations, so we see an uptick in requests for shelter. If the Dubuque shelters cannot accept an individual, staff will help that person access the homeless hotline, where a regional coordinator can help them find housing. When local shelters are full, Mim said, This might mean people are sent to another community. If Family Promise of Grant County is full, staff may refer individuals to other area shelters or help families temporarily stay in a hotel if shelter funds permit. We really don't have a lot of options to refer people, Jacobson said. There are times where they don't qualify for our program and they can truly struggle to find a place to live. As winter approaches, MIM invited area parishes to consider whether they might be able to open an unused community room for temporary housing. We're a caring community, so we can make this work, but the rescue mission, or Teresa's shelter, or Almost Home, we can't be the end-all be-all, he said. We only have so many beds, and when the need is greater than what we have to come up with other solutions. And finally from the front page, new mayors to lead area cities. With incumbents not seeking re-election, several communities choose new leadership, by Kaylee Reese. A handful of local communities in Iowa will now have new leaders at the helm. Voters elected new mayors in several local cities after current mayors decided not to seek another term. This included Dubuque, where Brad Kavanaugh was elected to succeed Mayor Roy Buell. In Manchester, current council member Connie Becken bested challenger Jeffrey Ogden, making her the first new Manchester mayor in 47 years. Milt Kramer announced his retirement from the position this summer. Becken said that she has big, big shoes to fill by following Kramer, adding that Kramer has served the community well over his tenure. I'm going to do whatever I can to take in some of his guidance and wisdom and hopefully apply that, she said. Becken said she hopes to continue the progress made by the council over her two terms, including adding housing to the city. Several entities have plans in the works to add housing developments, apartments, and condos, she said. She also said she wants to start conversations with state legislators about how to bring more young people to Manchester, as well as get more young people involved in local boards and commissions. We've got a nice mixture, but I'd like to see even younger people involved, she said. That's what's going to help keep people here. Jeff Jock, who ran for public office for the first time in his hometown of Dyersville, was elected as new mayor over Alvin Haas. Haas previously served one term as mayor following the 2013 election. Jock will now take over the mayoral seat from Jim Heavens, who previously announced he would not seek another term. Heavens served as mayor from 2003 to 2013 and was re-elected in 2017. I'm just proud to represent the citizens of the community right now, Jock said. First and foremost, I want to work for them and see what they want to do. Looking ahead, he said that funding options for the proposed 12th and 13th Avenue Bridge project will be discussed. The project's most recent price tag was $8 million. Jock added that he looks forward to working with Major League Baseball on next year's Field of Dreams game. Council member Stephen Knepper defeated former mayor Mike Henry and challenger Sue Knepper in the Cascade mayoral race. Current mayor Greg Stanner decided not to run for the position again. I'm looking forward to working with the council and doing things that give the taxpayers the most bang for their hard-earned tax dollars and doing things in a fiscally responsible manner, Knepper said. That's all you can hope to do for citizens. He added that the city has many infrastructure issues to address, and the city needs to continue its efforts to revitalize the downtown area. Following current Maquoketa Mayor Don Schwenker's decision not to run for re-election, Tom Messerly defeated Councilmember Kevin Kuhlman for the seat. Messerly previously served as Maquoketa's mayor from 2000 to 2008. There's a lot of projects that we need to finish up and some to get started, he said. We need to get the Platt Street project finished up, and then maybe we can get some sense of normalcy back without every road in town closed. Messerly added that the bridge south of Main Street also will need to be replaced, and that a thorough detour plan for traffic will need to be made. Councilmember Jay Heffel ran unopposed for the Farley mayoral seat after current Mayor Jeff Simon decided not to run. Heffel also served as the city's mayor from 2014 to 2017. Going forward, Heffel said the city needs to address various street projects throughout Farley, as well as make a solid plan for a new library and post office. "That's very important to the people, and they need some answers there," Heffel said. "I hope to get some clarity on that in the near future for everybody." Heffel added that Farley has had previous issues with city staff turnover, and he hopes to establish some longevity with the current staff members. Next, looking at today's almanac, today is Thursday, November 4th, the 308th day of 2021. There are 57 days left in the year. On this date, in 1842, Abraham Lincoln married Mary Todd in Springfield, Illinois. In 1862, inventor Richard J. Gatling received a U.S. patent for the rapid-fire Gatling gun. In 1922, the entrance to King Tutankhamun's tomb was discovered in Egypt. In 1942, during World War II, Axis forces retreated from El Alamein in North Africa in a major victory for British forces commanded by Lieutenant General Bernard Montgomery. In 1955, Baseball Hall of Fame pitcher Cy Young died in Newcomerstown, Ohio at age 88. In 1956, Soviet troops moved in to crush the Hungarian Revolution. And in 1979, the Iran hostage crisis began as militants stormed the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, seizing its occupants. For some of them, it was the start of 444 days of captivity. This almanac provided by the Associated Press. Next, from the Tri-State page, 5 new COVID-19 related deaths reported in Tri-State area. The Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and vaccination, publishing updates on Thursdays and Sundays. Wednesday's developments included 5 additional local COVID-19 related deaths were reported since 1 week ago, 4 in Dubuque County and 1 in Delaware County, Iowa. Another 434 Dubuque County residents were confirmed to have COVID-19 from October 27th to Wednesday, easily the county's highest total since the state went to once-per-week data reporting. Elsewhere in Iowa, both Clayton and Delaware counties had 66 new cases, Jackson County had 52, and Jones County had 47. 35 additional cases of COVID-19 in Grant County, Wisconsin, were confirmed from Saturday to Wednesday. Elsewhere in southwest Wisconsin, Lafayette County had 39 new cases in that time, Iowa County 41, and Crawford County 35. Joe Davies County, Illinois, had 38 new cases. As of Wednesday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention rated the level of community transmission as high, the highest rating in all 10 local counties, unchanged from Saturday. As of Wednesday, 165,569 residents of the Telegraph Herald's coverage area were fully vaccinated, which represents 68.1% of the population that is at least 12 years old. For current information on Dubuque County vaccination opportunities, visit www.dubuquecounty.org/sleevesup. New county-level hospitalization data for Iowa will be released today and included in Sunday's update. As of Wednesday, 491,052 Iowa residents have had COVID-19, an increase of 7,643 from a week earlier. A total of 86 additional COVID-19-related deaths were reported, increasing the total to 7,069. The state only updates these figures once per week. As of Wednesday, Dubuque Community Schools reported 90 active cases among students, an increase of 54 since Thursday, and 25 among staff, an increase of 16. Holy Family Catholic Schools reported 7 active cases among students system-wide, a decrease of 3 and 5 or fewer cases among staff compared to last week. Western Dubuque Community School District reported there were 43 student cases on Wednesday, up 8 since Friday, and 11 staff cases unchanged. The CDC reported that as of Wednesday, 1,757,486 Iowans were fully vaccinated, 65.7% of the state's residents who are at least 12 years old. As of Wednesday, 165,903 residents of the Telegraph Herald's coverage area were fully vaccinated, which represents 68.2% of the population that is at least 12 years old. In Wisconsin, 8,892 new COVID-19 cases were reported since Saturday, raising the state's total to 799,174. The state's related deaths increased by 71 to 8,554. As of Wednesday, 3,401,980 Wisconsin residents had been fully vaccinated, which is 68% of the state's residents who are at least 12 years old. In Illinois, 10,253 new COVID cases were reported since Saturday, raising the state's total to 1,705,777. Illinois' related deaths rose by 127 to 25,898. As of Wednesday, 7,661,549 Illinois residents had been fully vaccinated, 70.7% of the state's residents who are at least 12 years old. Next, from the Dubuque page, law enforcement liaison to assist community with brain health matters. Sheriff Joe Kennedy says brain health-related calls have increased since the start of the pandemic, by Kaylee Reese. The Dubuque County Sheriff's Department now has access to an employee to assist with people experiencing brain health crises. Gretchen Bradshaw, a Dubuque native, was offered the full-time position of law enforcement liaison in August and recently started. She previously was employed as a therapist at Hillcrest Family Services and has a master's degree in psychology. "I love to help my community, and I thought this job was just perfect for me," Bradshaw said. Though she works out of the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department office, Bradshaw is an employee of the Cedar Rapids, Iowa Mental Health Agency Foundation, Two Crisis Services. Mental Health Disability Services of the East Central Region is fully funding the liaison position for fiscal year 2022. The agency funds several other liaisons throughout its 9-county service area. That funding will decrease to 75% in its second year, 50% in its third year, and 25% its fourth year and beyond, with Dubuque County covering the rest. Bradshaw said she goes out on calls with deputies when a potential brain health need is identified. She then follows up with those people after they get immediate help. "Not everybody knows the resources they have available and what they do, so a lot of them call the emergency line," Bradshaw said. "I'm hoping to minimize some of that." She added that sometimes people who call law enforcement with a brain health matter need assistance with food or transportation barriers after receiving initial help with a crisis. "Those things cause depression in a lot of people, which can cause things to escalate at home," she said. "It's not always a one-and-done thing. When they get home, there may be more need." Sheriff Joe Kennedy said that prior to Bradshaw joining the team, deputies often would bring people in a brain health crisis to a hospital, and he said follow-up contact with those individuals was limited. "That was one of the biggest gaps," he said. "For us, I guess the procedure worked, but it was not the best case scenario. Now, we're hoping to reduce some of that." Kennedy added that the department always has had brain health-related calls come in, but those calls seem to have increased since the COVID-19 pandemic began. "Even if they don't necessarily start out as brain health calls, if you have a sexual assault or something like that, there could be brain health issues down the road," he said. Bradshaw said she looks forward to helping community members get connected with the resources they need and she has already gone on a handful of calls with deputies. I'm excited to be helping the community and being a tool for the deputies, she said. Next, Dubuque County seeks funding options after Conservation Board referendum defeated. $40 million bond measure needed 60% of the votes for approval, but came up short with 59.2%, by Benjamin Fisher. A large enough minority of Dubuque County voters rejected a $40 million bond issue for conservation initiatives and outdoor recreation projects this week, leaving the county looking for other funding sources. The referendum, placed on the ballot by the Dubuque County Conservation Board and Board of Supervisors, needed 60% of the vote in Tuesday's election to proceed. It would have provided $14 million for park improvements and expansion, $14 million for water quality, land protection and habitat management, $8 million for trail improvements, development and expansion, and $4 million for uses like agriculture-related water quality, ATV trails, and kayak launches, all projects highlighted by the county's two-year long-term planning process. On Tuesday, 9,150 people voted in favor of the initiative, 59.2% of the vote, and 2,848 more people than those who voted against. But given the 60% threshold, the 6,302 who voted against the measure were enough to derail it. Dubuque County Land and Water Legacy PAC Chair Art Roche issued a statement Wednesday saying the effort was still a partial victory. We hoped that today's vote would show that the citizens of Dubuque County believe that the preservation of our lands and waters, the improvement and expansion of our parks and trails, and the protection of our natural habitats are important enough for everyone to invest in, he said. The majority of voters do believe that, but not a supermajority. Roche wrote that more outreach might have made a difference. There's always the lingering feeling that if we had had one more meeting, obtained one more endorsement, contacted just a few more voters, the outcome might have been different, he said. But many more Dubuque County residents are aware of the fabulous parks we have in Dubuque County, and many more are aware of conservation issues, recreation opportunities, and all the outdoor wonders that comprise our beautiful county. According to County Auditor Kevin Dragato, 125 more voters would have been needed to win the referendum. Dubuque County Conservation Director Brian Preston said Wednesday that finding an alternative funding route will take some effort, especially since the $40 million was meant to be leveraged for far more state and federal funding. I know there's a lot of money being spent at the federal level, but very little of that is available for outdoor recreation and natural resources, he said. There are too many options outside of local support. Preston said one of the best options would be for the state legislature to fund the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund, the creation of which was approved by voters in a statewide referendum in 2010. The fund was created, but never funded. There is still some optimism that funding for that would pass, but it's been 11 years since voters approved that, and we still haven't seen any progress, he said. Preston was disappointed by the referendum's failure, but encouraged by the overwhelming majority support. It shows that most of the public is behind what we're doing, he said. The Dubuque County Land and Water Legacy PAC, supporting the measure, said owners of $160,000 of residential property with a taxable value of $88,000 could have expected to pay a maximum of $37.85 per year, $3.15 per month, to pay for the bonds. And in news in brief, soap business to open in Dubuque next week. A growing soap company plans to open a location in one of Dubuque's major shopping centers next week. Buff City Soap will open in Asbury Plaza on Thursday, November 11th, according to a press release issued by a marketing firm affiliated with the company. The location at 2445 Northwest Arterial is the former home of children's clothing retailer Carter's, which closed its doors earlier this year. For Buff City, the expansive space will serve as both a retail location and a makery, where employees will create handmade soaps and other products. Customers will have the chance to view the soap-making process while visiting the store. The store's normal hours will be 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday. Find more information at buffcitysoap.com. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, November 4th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Catherine A. Wills, 90, of Cuba City, died on Tuesday, November 2nd. Visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Sunday, November 7th, at Hottenschild Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, November 8th, at St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church in Cuba City. Burial will be in St. Rose Church Cemetery. Lloyd R. Harrington, 84, of Peosta, died on Tuesday, November 2nd. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, November 9th, at Epworth United Methodist Church, where services will follow. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. Kenneth F. Schmerbach, Jr., 66, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, November 2nd. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, November 6th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Faye Walls, 92, of Garnavello, died Tuesday, November 2nd. Visitation will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 9th, at Tuke Allen Funeral Home in Garnavello. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday at Gospel Hall in Garnavello. Ronald L. Harris, 85, of Fenimore, died on Monday, November 1st. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11:30 a.m. Saturday, November 6th, at Larson Family Funeral Home in Fenimore, where a memorial service will follow. Janice K. Link, 64, of Dickeyville, died on Tuesday, November 2nd. A private family service will be held. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Helen L. Kanke, 90, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, November 2nd. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday, November 5th, at Egelhoff Siegert and Casper Funeral Home, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Terrence Westmeyer, 79, of Galena, died on Tuesday, November 2nd. Complete arrangements are pending. Furlong Funeral Chapel of Galena is assisting the family. Patricia M. Todd, 84, of Galena, died on Sunday, October 31st. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 23rd, at Furlong Funeral Chapel in Galena. In today's funeral services column, Sally Bell of Garnavello, Iowa, visitation from 1 to 2 p.m. Friday, November 5th, at Tuke Allen Funeral Home in Garnavello. Services from at 2 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Jennifer Barabo, Clintonville, Wisconsin, visitation noon to 3 p.m. Saturday, November 6th, at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster, Wisconsin. Service at 3 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Timothy J. Britt of Adrian, Missouri, graveside service 1 p.m. Saturday, November 6th, at St. John's Cemetery in Delhi, Iowa. Celebration of life from 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday at Delhi Legion. Harold F. Carney of Benton, Wisconsin, military graveside service at 1 p.m. Saturday, November 6th, at St. Patrick's Church Cemetery in Benton. Grace R. Clancy of Dubuque, service at 10 a.m. today at Sacred Heart Church. John D. Cook of Galena, Illinois, visitation from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, November 6th, at Furlong Funeral Chapel in Galena. Service at 1 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Glenn E. Curtis of Cuba City, Wisconsin. Visitation from 9 to 10:45 a.m. Friday, November 5th at United Methodist Church in Cuba City. Service at 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Rita Feldman of Hopkinton, Iowa. Visitation from 9 to 10 a.m. today at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville, Iowa. Mass of Christian burial at 11 a.m. today at St. Luke's Catholic Church in Hopkinton. Laura L. Friedel of Cuba City, Wisconsin. Visitation from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. today at Haddonshield Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City. Service at 11:30 a.m. today at the funeral home. William R. Harris of Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, November 6th at Platteville, Wisconsin, Golf and Country Club. Service at 3 p.m. Saturday at the Country Club. Edward J. Harwick of Cuba City, Wisconsin. Celebration of Life from 5 to 9 p.m. Saturday, November 13th at PJ's Hall in Keeler, Wisconsin. A graveside service at 12:30 p.m. Sunday, November 14th at Scales Mound, Illinois, Holy Trinity Cemetery. Ricky W. Heilman of Cuba City, Wisconsin. Visitation from 3 to 8 p.m. Friday, November 5th, and 8 to 9:45 a.m. Saturday, November 6th, at Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Cuba City. Service at 10 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Justin J. Heitzman of Seattle, Tacoma, Washington. Visitation from 9 to 11 a.m. Monday, November 8th, at St. Joseph the Worker Catholic Church in Dubuque. Service at 11 a.m. Monday at the church. Richard C. Hoffman of Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, November 5th, at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster. And 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 6th, at St. Clement Catholic Church in Lancaster. Parish Rosary at 3:45 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Mass of Christian burial at 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the church. Marina J. Klein of Dubuque. Visitation from 3 to 7 p.m. today at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory at 3860 Asbury Road. Mass of Christian burial at 10:30 a.m. Friday, November 5th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Rickardsville, Iowa. Michael J. Koch of Epworth, Iowa. Visitation from 2 to 5 p.m. today at Bear Funeral Home at 1491 Main Street. Michael D. Laird of Dubuque. Visitation from 9 to 10:45 a.m. today at Egelhoff Siegert and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Mass of Christian burial at 11:30 a.m. today at St. Raphael Cathedral. Doris M. Malone of Dubuque. Visitation from 10 to 11 a.m. Monday, November 8th at Holy Ghost Catholic Church. Funeral Mass at 11 a.m. Monday at the church. Dorothy A. Meyer of Dyersville, Iowa. Visitation from 3 to 7 p.m. Friday, November 5th, and 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday, November 6th, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Service at 10:30 a.m. Saturday at St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville. Terrence J. O'Rourke of Dubuque. Visitation from 3 to 8 p.m. Monday, November 8th, at Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory at 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Service at 10 a.m. Tuesday, November 9th, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Lawrence Flieger of East Dubuque, Illinois. Funeral Mass at 11 a.m. Monday, November 8th, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Galena. Mark D. Relihan of Dubuque. Celebration of Life from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, November 5th at Best Western at 3100 Dodge Street. Cletus A. Sisley of Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation from 9 to 11 a.m. Monday, November 8th at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home in Lancaster. Service at 11 a.m. Monday at the funeral home. Joyce A. Thilmani of Dubuque, visitation from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Monday, November 8th, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory at 3860 Asbury Road. Service at 10:30 a.m. Monday at the funeral home. Orlando G. Valente of Sinsinawa, Wisconsin. Visitation from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday, November 6th at Bear Funeral Home at 1491 Main Street. Services at noon Saturday at the funeral home. And Luke Wohlers of Dyersville, Iowa. Visitation from 3 to 8 p.m. today at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Services at 10 a.m. Friday, November 5th at Journey Church in Dubuque. Next, from the sports page, the Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week, Casey Martinson of Benton. Martinson embraces return to, quote, normal state meet by Jim Leitner. Casey Martinson didn't have to play beat the clock this time around. She did it anyway. The Southwestern Benton Cuba City senior ran a 5K time of 18 minutes 10 seconds to win her third consecutive Wisconsin Division II state cross-country championship on Saturday at the Ridges Golf Course in Wisconsin Rapids. She beat Faith Wehrman of New Berlin Eisenhower by 14.7 seconds, with the fourth fastest time in Division II history and the 12th fastest overall. A year ago, because of COVID-19 concerns, the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association dramatically altered the look of the state meet. The three divisions ran at three different sites, and the WIAA split up each race, so runners ran for times instead of racing the competition. "I'm so glad it was back to normal this year for my last high school race," Martinson, the Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week, said Saturday. "The meet environment was really cool. We had three times the people because all of the divisions were here. That made it so much more fun. Last year, with all the races split up, we really didn't know how we did after the race. We ran at 12:45 p.m. and didn't even know how we did until about 5:30 on the drive home. Then it was kind of like, oh yay, this was a lot more exciting." Martinson, who finished third at state as a freshman and won all four sectional championships, became just the fifth female and the 11th runner in state history with three state championships. But her impact on the Southwestern Benton Cuba City tryop extends well beyond the record book or trophy case. "Casey's meant so much to all of us," Coach Paul Reynolds said. "She's a great teammate, a great team leader, very noble. She's always ready to pick someone up if they're having a bad day, and she's just a lot of fun to be around. The team really rallies around her and becomes more of a team because of her personality." Just days before the state meet, Martinson verbally committed to run for perennial power Iowa State University. On Friday, the Cyclones placed second at the ultra-competitive Big 12 Conference Championships. "I really liked the team environment, and all the coaches were really nice," Martinson said. "When it came down to making the decision, it just felt like that was where I belonged. I'm really looking forward to it. Even though I ran for a smaller high school, I'm really looking forward to being a part of a big team like Iowa State, where everyone has the same mindset as I have. They're all there to get better every day, so it will be cool to be around a lot of people who have the same goals as I have. At the collegiate level, women run 6K races, but Martinson doesn't mind the extra distance. I run pretty much everything from 800 meters on up, so it doesn't make a big difference to me," she said. "I think it'll be a lot of fun." Next, in prep volleyball, Bobcats show resolve. Number 1 Western Dubuque holds off Marion in 4A state semifinals by Steve Ortman. Dateline, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Western Dubuque was in the midst of finding out why Marion had garnered a reputation this season for never giving up. Then, the Wolves got a lesson in the resolve of the Bobcats. Maddie Harris floored 16 kills with 8 digs, Meredith Ball added 15 kills, and Maddie Maz served up 40 assists as the number 1 Bobcats held off the rally of number 5 Marion, 25-19, 25-18, 17-25, and 25-15 in an Iowa Class 4A state semifinal on Wednesday at the Alliant Energy Powerhouse. "We will not back down," Ball said. "We will fight until the end. We'll leave everything on the court, and we want to win as bad as anyone. We just want to win a state championship, and here we are. We have our chance." The Bobcats, 33-3, won their 26th straight match and advanced to today's 12:15 p.m. state championship match against number 3 Waverly Shell Rock, 44-7. Western Dubuque will be competing in the state final for the second time in 3 seasons with another crack at bringing home the program's first state crown. "It feels really amazing just getting here," said Western Dubuque senior defensive specialist Natalie Ulrichs, who finished with 12 digs and 2 assists. "We battled and we knew it wasn't going to be easy. We're ready to go all the way." Libby Lansing finished with 8 kills for Western Dubuque. Maz added 7 kills and 11 digs, and Ella Meyer finished with 13 digs. Emma Kapler had 4 aces. Marion, 37-9, was led by Michaela Goad's 16 kills and 13 more from Avery Van Hook, who is the daughter of former Western Dubuque standout player Erica Kilberg and granddaughter of legendary Bobcats coach Tom Kilberg. As the Wolves made a push at the end of the second set and then controlled the third, the Bobcats dug deep to again show the resolve of a champion. "What we told the girls in Game 4 is that they fixed everything we asked them to fix in Game 3, Bobcats coach Megan Sherman said. "That's the key to these girls. They know what they need to fix, and they fix it." The Wolves held leads of 1-0 and 2-1 in the opening set, but otherwise the Bobcats set the tone and led throughout. Kapler delivered a pair of aces to help Western Dubuque push its lead out to 15-10, then, as Marion crept back within 16-14, Franny Heiberger's big swing gave the Bobcats momentum back. Marion cut Western Dubuque's lead to 20-18, but the Bobcats sealed it with a 5-1 run. Western smashed a kill, then a net violation by the Wolves preceded another Harris kill, and a Klusner's block kill wrapped up the 25-19 win for Western Dubuque. "We've been pretty good on defense, and it's a big part of our game," Ulrich said. "Defense wins games, and we had a pretty good game on that end. We talk a lot back there, and it helps us stay on track." The Wolves got no closer than a 1-1 tie in the second set, but they did make it interesting down the stretch. Kills from Ball and Maz, along with another ace from Kapler, pushed Western Dubuque out to a 12-2 advantage. Harris chipped in with a pair of kills as the Bobcats were cruising along with a 20-7 lead. But that's when Marion began playing its best stretch of the match, staking out to an 11-3 run to suddenly cut their deficit to 23-18 and forcing Western Dubuque to call a timeout. The Bobcats promptly answered with a Harris kill and an ace from Meyer to wrap up the 25-18 victory and a 2-0 match lead. Keeping our offense going and Maddie Maz getting the perfect passes on her sets, like she always does, that's what we really needed to put it away, Harris said. "We knew their game plan coming into this, and we knew what we had to do. We just trusted in the process." Marion continued its turnaround in the third set, leading wire to wire. The Wolves got out to a 5-0 lead, and then Western Dubuque pulled within 7-6 and then 10-8. Marion had the answer. Besides strong placements from Van Hook and Goad, the Wolves went on a 7-3 run to create some breathing room. While Ball smoked a pair of nice shots to inch closer, the Wolves closed out a 25-17 win to avoid the sweep. "Obviously, in the third set, we weren't quite there," Lansing said. When they went up by that much, you know you're moving on and going to the next set. You're just not going to get 12 straight points or whatever. It's very unlikely. Once we were down that much, we just had to focus on the next set and closing it out there. The teams played to 7 ties in the fourth set, and the Wolves even took a 6-5 advantage, but Western Dubuque wouldn't relent. Maz had a sweet return that landed in, then Harris and Ball added kills along with a lancing block for a point. Maz added a block to extend the lead to 17-9, then kills from Lansing and Harris led to the inevitable of Maz's pretty drop shot to punch Western Dubuque's ticket back to the final. After we lost that set, we knew we weren't playing the way that we should have, Ball said. We had to pick up our serve, receive, and our defense, and we weren't picking up balls that we should. It came down to those things, and fortunately, we did turn it around. Now, we just have to go take home that championship. Next, in the local and area roundup, Galena Spikers finish at 36-2-1. Galena saw its sensational volleyball season come to an end Wednesday night. Illinois Class 1A, number 2-ranked Freeport-Aquinas, ended the 3rd-ranked Pirates' run with a straight set 25-21, 25-17 victory in sectional final at Elgin, Illinois. Maggie Furlong led Galena with 12 kills, while Taylor Hilby added 8 more, and Julia Townsend contributed 23 assists. Lucy Arndt had 15 kills and 9 digs to lead Freeport-Aquinas. Galena's only 2 losses on the season came to the number 1 and number 2 ranked teams in 1A. The Pirates took the opening set from top-ranked St. Thomas More on their home court on October 16th before dropping the next 2. Galena, 36-2-1, won its first 21 matches of the season before playing to a tie in a shortened contest against Princeton. The Pirates then won their next 7 in a row leading up to that showdown with St. Thomas More. The Pirates claimed their 14th regional title last week. Men's soccer. Loras 3, Simpson 0. At Indianola, Iowa. Reed Miklovic gave the Duhawks 12-6-2 the lead with a goal in the 21st minute, and Kevin Kukaba extended it with scores in the 37th and 90th minutes as number 3-seeded Loras took down number 2-seeded Simpson in the American Rivers Conference Tournament semifinals. Dubuque 3, Luther 0. At Oyen Field. The match was scoreless well into the second half before the top-seeded Spartans, 13-3-1, reeled off 3 consecutive goals to advance past 4th-seeded Luther in the ARC tournament semifinals. Glory Luara found the back of the net in the 66th minute, followed by goals by Drake Littler in the 70th minute and Lucas von Braun in the 79th minute. The victory sets up an intra-city tournament final with University of Dubuque hosting Loras for the championship on Saturday. In women's soccer, Loras 1, Luther 0 in 2 overtimes. At Rock Bowl, Riley O'Brien netted the game's only goal at 104 minutes 39 seconds of double overtime to send the number 1-seeded Duhawks 17-0-1 past Luther in the ARC tournament semifinals. Loras will host 2nd-seeded Wartburg on Saturday for the championship. And finally, from Sports in Brief, under baseball, Reds trade Barnhart to Tigers. The Cincinnati Reds traded veteran Gold Glove catcher Tucker Barnhart to the Detroit Tigers on Wednesday in exchange for infield prospect Nick Quintana and Solar Freeman Correa among 160 free agents. Freddie Freeman, World Series MVP Jorge Soler, and Eddie Rosario of the champion Atlanta Braves were among 160 players who became free agents Wednesday as an uncertain offseason started with a lockout threat looming. Houston shortstop Carlos Correa and Astros pitcher Justin Verlander, who is recovering from Tommy John surgery, also became free agents. Other stars who hit the market include Corey Seager, Trevor Story, Max Scherzer, Marcus Semien, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Michael Conforto, and Kevin Gausman. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, November 4th, 2021. I'm your reader, Ralph Skippers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. As always, thanks for listening, and be safe.